Calling all small firm architects. It's time to tap into your full potential with Entree Architects Context and Clarity, where inspiration meets innovation. Hey, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my two favorite co-hosts, Jeff Eccles and Katie Kangas, as they bring together authors, experts, and thought leaders for electric conversations with entrepreneur architects around the globe. It's not just a podcast. It's a community where dreams meet action.
There's a simple equation there. And what for me, what that did, just doing that basic calculation, was it allowed me to compare what I had actually saved in my retirement accounts to what I thought a possible projected annual spend might be.
Artists are temperamental, so beautiful design is going to be a priority. When the job is done, we're going to actually need to live in the house, not live with the person who designed it. And so for me, the artistic skill, the architectural skill is most important. And so I would say like that would be 60% of it, if not more.
Gain insights to build a successful practice. Subscribe, engage, and let's redefine your future together. Join the Context and Clarity community, where every conversation adds to your blueprint for success. This is the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast with Mark R. LePage, Episode 5. We've enjoyed lots of engagement on the blog lately, and one subject that consistently triggers a response from readers is professional liability insurance. What it is, why we need it, and if we need it as sole proprietors and owners of small firms. Today on the podcast, I'm speaking with Frank Musica. Frank is trained as an architect, practiced in Chicago, has earned a Master's of Business Administration and a law degree, and today he's the Senior Risk Management Attorney at Victor O'Shinnerer & Company. So who better to answer all our questions and concerns about this complicated and often misunderstood subject than the man who's in charge of doing just that for the largest provider of insurance to the architecture profession. So here's my interview with Frank. I hope you enjoy it. So Frank, welcome to the Entrepreneur Architect Podcast.
Thank you.
So let's start out with you. Tell me a little bit about your background and some about Shinnerer's background.
Okay. I started out life as an architect, worked with small firms in Chicago after graduating, and decided that my fate during that recession was not what I wanted. I went back to school, taught a little bit, got an MBA, and stayed for a law degree. And since that, I've worked with large AE firms. I worked with the American Institute of Architects and Government Affairs, worked with some other associations for engineers and architects. And about 22 years ago, this company brought me on board to do two things. One, to kind of look at claims information and see what we could pick out of the claims information that might be helpful in risk management. And two, to really look forward at some of the changes for architects and engineers and landscape architects and surveyors, because claims always come in after you perform your services. And then after they're resolved, there's a time lag between performance and what they can do to help educate you in the next time around. So part of what I do is look forward and see what risk BIM or sustainability or other things might end up causing for architects, engineers, and others.
And what about Shinnerer? What's the background in Shinnerer?
Well, Shinnerer, it's an interesting company because it started out as just a regular insurance brokerage. And back in the mid-50s, the incoming president of the AIA approached Vic Shinnerer, who ran the company, and asked him to really come up with a special program for architects. As you can imagine, this in the 50s, post-World War II, there was a lot of construction and a lot of construction that was put in place quickly and poorly, and a lot of the lawsuits against not only contractors, but of course, architects and engineers. The AI had been searching for some kind of a program, not just an insurance policy, but a real program for architects, and they went to Victioner to develop it. Until that time, an architect bought the same insurance policy that a lawyer or an accountant or even a doctor would buy, because it all was based on professional liability, which is negligence in the performance of professional services. So Vic worked with the AIA, joined in with the National Society of Professional Engineers, and in 1956 really developed the first program that was both insurance and risk management, and then it went national in 1957. So we've been around since 1957. Most professional liability insurance companies have been around 2, 3, 4, 5 years, maybe the other oldest one is 12 years or so.
So Schinnerer was the first professional liability insurance company for architects?
The first one that really focused on both providing insurance coverage and risk management information. Because it was looked at as architects had unique risks, and how do you manage those risks? And one way you do it is by buying insurance, but there's a lot of other things you can do as well. So it was really the first program that kind of combined everything together into a risk management effort rather than just pure insurance.
So there was a connection between the AIA and Schinnerer. Are you officially the official provider of the AIA?
Well, not exactly. For 50 some years, 55 years of our life, we were what's called a commended program of the AIA, which meant it was the only program that the AIA as a national organization would commend to its members. But we actually walked away from that a few years ago, mostly because they wanted to tie a financial aid to the Institute as part of that, and we do not think that was in the best interest of our policyholders or our company. We still work with the AIA Trust as a marketing relationship with us. The AIA Trust, if people haven't looked at its website, which is the AIATrust.com, offers a lot of stuff to architects. AIA Trust is part of the Institute, but it handles the insurance and financial aspects of practice. It has a lot of information on the website and a lot of other programs that especially architects starting out might want to check out.
Okay, we'll do that. This topic, professional liability insurance, is by far one of the most popular topics that I come across with other architects. In addition to the Entrepreneur Architect website at entrearchitect.com, I also manage the Entrepreneur Architect LinkedIn group. And one of the comments that I see very often is from small firms and recently launched firms are architects asking whether they need professional liability insurance and what it costs. Can you give us some reasons why a small firm really does need professional liability insurance?
Well, whether a small firm needs it or not depends a lot on what kind of assets it has, business assets and personal assets, and what kind of clients it works with. Obviously, the reason you carry insurance is to protect your assets. Whether it's homeowners insurance that protects the value of your home or car insurance. And professional liability insurance does the same thing. No matter what kind of clients you're servicing, the client and anyone else who could be harmed by what you do can sue you. And they can go after your assets. And your personal assets are at risk, partially because architects are licensed professionals. And that means they are personally liable for what they do. So small firms, depending on what they're doing, may see a lot of risk, and they may want to protect their assets by buying professional liability insurance. It's not cheap. It's usually probably the biggest expense a small firm will have. But I think a lot of firms find it necessary. There's kind of an interesting I think, dichotomy between a lot of small firms that are starting out with the entrepreneurial spirit and a lot that have become firms basically because of necessity, entrepreneurs by necessity. When a Baltimore firm goes, architecture firm goes bankrupt, all of a sudden we see, you know, 10 or 15 firms formed because they go out on their own. A lot of those people who have been in business for a while and who may want to serve the same kind of clients understand the need to have professional liability insurance. But a lot of architects just registered, just starting out, often put it off as much as possible. And that can be dangerous. It really depends. Just to give you some idea of when we look at small firms in our program, we look at firms in either the up to $250,000 worth of buildings or sometimes up to $500,000 worth of buildings. And you may think that's a fairly large firm. But, you know, those are small firms, and we probably insure 10,000 of them. You know, a lot of those firms never see a lawsuit against them, never see a professional liability claim against them. Probably out of every 100 small firms we insure, on a yearly average, 7 of them might get a claim against them. And of those, you know, 7, 8, maybe 9%. Basically have a claim against them, which means you could go years without getting a claim. And many of those claims are just claims that may not really result in your responsibility. Maybe a third, close to 40% of every claim filed against an architect ends up with the architect being held responsible somehow. More of those require the architect to get himself out of the trouble, which entails defense costs. But we know that of the ones who have claims against them and who end up being held responsible, you know, the average claim payment now is about $160,000-$170,000 a year, and that could be a major hit for a small firm if they don't have insurance.
Yeah, it could put a small firm out of business without any problem.
And one of the interesting things is just going out of business doesn't solve your problem.
Right.
Because if you're a licensed design professional, it's not your business assets. It's all of your assets. And in some states, your house, your car, your dog may be protected, but your savings won't be. Because if you cause the kind of problem that results in professional liability and you sign and seal those documents, or even if you hold yourself out as a professional, but most state laws will go straight at you and go after your assets. Having professional liability insurance often serves as kind of a limitation of liability, because if an injured party or a client who's harmed sees that as coverage that's available, they often will settle for that rather than go after personal assets. So it can serve as kind of a de facto limitation of liability as well. And in some cases, you may work with clients who say, we won't hire you unless you have professional liability insurance coverage. Municipalities usually don't. Institutions often don't, because they know they've been hurt in the past and they want to work with someone who has something behind what they do.
Do you know if, this is another question that I've been asked, if the AIA contract documents require architects to carry insurance?
No. In the last version of the AIA documents, it was the first time they even mentioned professional liability insurance. It's always been the AIA's policy and our policy that that's a personal decision for a firm and should not be mandated by contract. But the AIA in the last version, the 2007 version, had at least a listing of insurance coverages and mentioned professional liability insurance.
And so there's a blank where they can fill it in if
there's
they have
a blank. Yeah. Right. And you know, it really depends on the discussions with the client. On smaller projects, I think the smaller project documents of the AIA do not mention it. Only the larger ones do. But, you know, some owners will say, well, you know, I understand you're a small firm. I understand you don't have that kind of insurance coverage, and will be willing to work with you. And others, especially when now in the last, you know, 5 years with the economy, it's difficult for a public client to risk the reputation of politicians or even bureaucrats to hire someone who doesn't have adequate professional liability insurance coverage. Some institutions may very well say, for this kind of a project, we don't need someone with insurance. But in this one, especially a project that actually leads to construction, we're not going to work with anyone who doesn't have some kind of insurance coverage.
Yeah, I have a small firm, and we've had professional liability since day one. We've been around 15 years. And in addition to it helping us, you know, be protected, I think it's also a way to help market our firm. That gives us a level of credibility that another firm that doesn't have insurance, you know, doesn't have.
Yeah, that's right. You show that you're a stable operation. You show that you understand what the business risks really are, and you show that you're willing to have something that stand behind your services. And I think that can make a big difference in marketing. One of the problems we see now, and you may be seeing it in your private practice, is during the downturn in the economy, a lot of larger firms were going after smaller projects. And one of the ways that they differentiated themselves from smaller firms that could do the same projects, they said, look, that small firm may not have coverage or may not have adequate coverage, and you really need someone who has a lot of professional liability coverage. So they were actually marketing themselves for smaller projects based on their higher insurance rates, which has really messed up the system, because now all of a sudden you have that same public official saying, well, you know, in the past, if you had $250,000 worth of professional liability coverage, we think that's adequate for what you're doing. But now we've been told that you really have to have $5 million worth of coverage. Well, you know, that's ludicrous for most projects. But larger firms were marketing their insurance coverage that way. And that may be disruptive of small practice for a while.
Right. Like I mentioned, you know, we've been in business for 15 years. And we've never had a claim. Recently, I documented on my website a scare that we had, where a client did, you know, initiate a suit against us. Didn't actually file the suit, but had an attorney write a letter and threaten us. And luckily, that, you know, we worked it out, you know, through some letters and through some, you know, conversations. But I can tell you, it was a nice feeling knowing that I had the protection that if it didn't work out, I had somewhere to go. Because if that suit had gone through, I probably wouldn't be in business today.
Yeah, and it's interesting because the professional liability insurance policies aren't standard policies. They vary a great deal in what they cover and how they cover things. One of the aspects of our program that's been around for decades is there's pre-claims assistance, so that, you know, if a firm gets a letter or a phone call that simply says something's wrong with this project, we need to have a meeting, you know, that can be filed as a pre-claim, and it doesn't entail any cost in the sense of a deductible obligation or anything, but it's a way to get firms out of claims, and it's been very successful because, you know, as I said, you know, you may not have many claims. When you get a claim, you're going to have defense costs no matter what. And, you know, there is still a likelihood that 30 or 40% of those claims may end up with you having to pay something. So you want an insurance company that will be with you all the way through, help you structure contracts ahead of time that might help you keep away from claims, help you if there's any sense of an incident or circumstance that could lead to a claim, and then defend you when the claim, if a claim actually comes.
And there's no additional costs to that, or?
No, but you know, professional liability insurance rates vary a great deal. Yep. I mean, they vary a great deal within one company. If you're in New York, you're going to be paying higher rates than firm the same size in Iowa. If you're a firm doing one type of project, even in a state like Iowa, rather than another type, your rate's going to change. So there's a lot of factors that go into it. Obviously, level of buildings is one factor, because that means you're doing more services and therefore more risk. But the type of project can be a major difference too. But insurers look at firms differently, and they look at their coverage differently. So some firms offer pretty low rates, but they may not be providing much in the way of coverage. And for a lot of firms, they don't care. They may just care that they have a name that can go on a certificate of insurance. So when a client says you have insurance, they can say, yes, we have insurance. Others will pay more for someone that has local claims people who can help them out more closely. It can vary a great deal. But yeah, you have to look at insurance coverage very carefully to see what you can get out of it. It's interesting that, you know, there's a lot of firms that don't get sued. And they say, well, you know, I'll get the cheapest coverage available. They get hit with one major lawsuit, and they feel that, you know, that it's a major difference.
Yeah.
We've seen insurers, you know, during when everyone was concerned about mold, simply write into their policy something that said, you know, if there's an allegation of harm caused by water intrusion in any way, that's not covered. Well, you know, you wonder what your insurance is really going to cover.
Right, right. What are some claims against small firms that architects need to be aware of?
Well, you know, in a lot of cases, especially when you hear terms like tort reform and all that, you really think of bodily injury claims, slip and fall claims. That's really a small number of claims against architects and engineers and other design professionals. Property damage claims, where something may harm property owned by another. Those are basic coverages, but that's not where the big risk is. Most architects face claims from their clients or from the contractors involved in the project. You know, claims from clients and contractors amount to between 75% and 80% of all claims against design professionals. So it's not the slip and fall so much, or even an injured worker type claim. It's the kind of claims where an owner is unhappy with what happened, or often because there was a delay in a project, or the project cost more money than budgeted. So that extra cost, you know, makes clients very unhappy and makes clients scramble to find someone to pay for. So if, you know, you're doing a project with sustainability and, you know, the client is thinking that because of what you've told the client, that the energy reduction is going to be 50% of what they've seen on other projects, and it turns out not to be 50%, they're going to be unhappy. And they're going to ask for some recovery to make up for that difference. So there's all kinds of economic loss claims that come from clients or from contractors as well, because obviously if a contractor has people on the site, that's a huge cost. And if there's a delay in the project, that means a contractor is incurring much greater cost than they anticipated. They're going to look for someone to pay for that delay. And often it's the architect. And if the architect is in fact responsible because they screwed up something in a document, or they misdesigned something, and or they specified a product that isn't readily available, that's a delay, and that leads to a lot of costs.
And I've heard the term claims made. Is that basically what that is?
Well, yeah, let's talk a little bit about that. That's a little bit different. You know, people who haven't been in practice for a while and who have just bought homeowners insurance or other insurance are buying coverages that are called occurrence-based coverage, and which means that if you get in a car accident today and you're insured, your insurance will pay that claim that comes out of that event. Even if you drop your insurance coverage, it's going to pay because the event happened while you were insured. That's a little bit different with professional liability insurance. It's always been on what's called a claims-made basis, which means you can't buy a policy today for a project you're working on, and when that project is finished, drop the policy and still expect it to pay. It's got to be in place when you were negligent, when you caused the harm, and in place when that claim comes in. So it's really paying on a basis of claims made while you're insured. And that's kind of a difficult thing for new firms, because you may be doing projects without insurance, by insurance, and in most cases, that insurance is not going to cover you for projects you've done before. Right? It's only going to cover you while you're insured for projects you're working on while you're insured. So if you're starting out, you may have risk that's been hanging around from other projects you do. Eventually, you may get something called prior acts coverage, which is, extends back to earlier projects you've done. But you have to be very careful in buying insurance, whether or not you know what's being covered when. And if you switch carriers, whether or not they're picking up claims that might end up coming from past projects or not. So a claims made policy really says, you know, you're buying a set amount of insurance, a limit of your liability, and it's only going to be in place when that claim is made, you know, if you have it in continuous coverage. Who has been working with another firm, maybe a larger firm, and you're at the point where you're signing and sealing documents, and you decide to go out on your own, you may worry about what happens if I get sued because my name's on those documents for something I did with that firm I used to work for. Well, if that firm had coverage when you worked for them and continues coverage, you're going to be covered by that policy. So, you know, if you're going out on your own, but you came from a larger firm, you probably don't have to worry about anything you've done earlier with that firm. You do have to look forward.
And does it matter if you change companies? Will that other companies?
Change insurance companies?
Insurance companies, yeah.
It depends. And you have to look at that very carefully. Usually, if you've been in practice for a while and you've been insured for a while and you change to another company, that company will pick up all the past risk as well. So you're not at risk for those projects. You didn't drop the coverage, right? You just switched it to a new carrier. In some cases, that new carrier won't pick up everything. And there's a number of reasons for that. It may be using a different kind of form that excludes some things that you had coverage for before, so it's going to be excluded. Or it may just decide that it doesn't want to take the risk without taking any premium for things you did before. Because remember, insurance is kind of a simple business. You just collect the money, anticipate what claims might come in over the next number of years, and you've got to collect that money to pay those future claims. You know, if you're paying past claims, you haven't collected any money to pay for that. So you end up in a situation where you're spending money for where you haven't picked up any money. That's one reason why professional liability insurance is on a claims-made basis. With an occurrence policy, just to give you an example, you know all the asbestos chaos that's been going on for decades now. CNA, which actually underwrites the Schindler program, had property insurance that was on an occurrence basis. In 1957, it insured a company, Johns Manville, for 2 years. And because of that, and because asbestos takes a long time to develop, everyone who insured Johns Manville basically was told, you have some risk for these future claims. So even though CNA only insured that company from 1957 to 1959, it recently made another $1.5 billion payment into the fund that pays for asbestos harm. because of the risk it had back then.
Wow.
So if you did that with architecture, that would mean your risk would be, you know, you would have this continuing risk over so many years you really can't collect enough premium. So you have to be careful about, when you're looking at professional liability, what kind of policy that really is, what they're excluding, what they're covering. Exclusions are usually well-defined in policies, and that's the part you've got to read really carefully.
Right. So it's certainly a good idea for starting up firms to get liability insurance as soon as possible. And if not, and you wait, then at least make sure that you have prior acts coverage in your new policy.
You try to get prior acts coverage. Yeah, and it may take a while for you to get that, but if you're staying with an insurer for a while, they usually extend it backwards. And, you know, one of the difficulties that small firms face is that you buy insurance through a broker or through an agent. You don't really, because of state laws and, you know, insurance companies have to deal with 56 jurisdictions, and state laws vary, they usually have to sell the insurance through a locally licensed broker or agent. And there's a difference between a broker and agent. An agent works for an insurance company and sells you the policy. A broker works for you and either makes its money from a payment from you or a commission, which is really no more than a payment from you passed through the insurance company. But brokers tend to be more objective on the coverage because they'll look at a number of firms' insurance companies to see what fits into your type of practice and your budget. An agent may very well try to steer you to the company that's going to be paying it its commission. What makes it difficult for small firms is, you know, you may think you're paying a lot of money for insurance, but the amount that goes to the broker isn't that much. And they may not be an expert, and they may not care a whole lot about you. So you have to be very careful in, you know, are you working with a broker who understands what you're doing? If not, then you probably want to be with a carrier who really is focused on what you're doing, because the information that a broker can't provide you, the carrier can. Like we have a major website, planetriskmanagement.com, that is accessible to everyone, but most of it's information for our policyholders. It has just a ton of information on it. So if you're a small firm working through a broker who doesn't understand what you do, going to a website like that can provide you with tons of information. In some cases, you may be able to find a local broker who really understands what you do and can help you. It can help read your contracts and adjust your coverage for, you know, your practice as it changes, and can be helpful in really helping you manage your business.
What about other types of coverage? Are there other types of policies architects should be looking at?
Well, you know, the more sophisticated you get as a business, the more you're going to need insurance coverage. I mean, that's obvious. But one thing I think a lot of starting architects don't understand, because they work out of their homes, is that you better understand whether or not your homeowner's policy will cover what you do. It's not going to cover your professional liability, but if you have a client that comes to your home and slips and falls on your steps, or if you have a dog outside that attacks the client, or even if you have, you know, somebody who's a messenger who's bringing in stuff for your business and somehow is injured on your property, you better know if your homeowner's policy will cover that, because some homeowner's policies won't cover home-based businesses. You know, they'll cover that guest that comes up and slips and falls on your sidewalk, but they won't cover that client who comes up and slips and falls on your sidewalk. So you need to look at your homeowner's coverage, and if it doesn't cover that kind of risk, you have to either put a rider onto it to extend the coverage, or you have to look for some other business coverages. And there's a lot of kind of package coverages for small firms. They're called builder business owner protective policies, BOPs, or some other ones. And we sell that. We sell a product called Design One, which can offer all kinds of other insurance coverages for small firms. But you know, you need to look at things like car insurance. Does your car insurance cover you if you're using your car to go on a business trip? And if you're using your car on the site of someone, you know, is that covered? You can also have situations where you may be doing a small project that's near a railroad track, and railroads won't let you on their property unless you have something called railroad protective insurance. And that's another type of insurance that you can often buy on a project-by-project basis. But there's a number of insurance coverages that you have to look at. The information on the AIA Trust website lists a number of these kind of insurance coverages and products. And, you know, if you're starting out, you really need to look at that. You know, and as you get larger, there are firms that are relatively small that still face problems with employment practices liability, and you can buy insurance for your employment practices liability. If you get involved with any employees at all in any kind of 401k program for them, you know, there's risks involved in that. So there's a lot of business risks that go along with operating a professional practice, and you really have to look at what insurance coverages, you know, apply to that. You know, you may be using BIM, what happens when your server goes down and wipes out all that information? You know, that's not a professional liability exposure. That's a technology exposure, and you better know if you have insurance coverage for that. You know, it's like the valuable papers coverage that people use, you know, you carry because if your plans went up in smoke, you know, your client is harmed, that project is set behind, and somebody's going to have to recover. And you know, so you get valuable papers coverage to cover that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Computer servers and BIM coverage, that's something that I think most people aren't thinking about.
That's right. And I think as we get more and more into sharing information electronically, there can be a number of problems. You know, you could end up introducing a virus into a client's database. You could just lose the information. You know, there's firms that are now working off their tablets or working off a notebook computer. And what happens if that computer disappears? You know, do you have coverage for that and for the information that was on it? Those are all very, you know, kind of specific risks that may or may not be covered by some of the policies you have. And unfortunately, you have to dig into that and really look to see if you have coverage for that.
Right. Well, let's get a little bit into cost, because I think that's probably the biggest question people
have.
Yeah,
it's really difficult to project, you know, what costs are, because, you know, it varies a great deal with the kind of projects you do and where you are. If you look on like our website and look at the small firm program, you'll see something that says, you know, the minimum premium is $1,000. I don't know of any firm that only pays $1,000 in professional liability insurance coverage. You know, we have special programs for firms up to $250,000 where you can get a 3-year policy and all that. You know, it's still going to cost you money. I mean, it's not unusual for, say, a firm that's doing $350,000 worth of business a year to be paying $8,000-$10,000 a year in insurance premiums. You know, and that's, you know, for maybe $1 million worth of coverage with a $1,000 deductible. You know, some insurers will sell $250,000 worth of coverage, and in many cases that's enough will qualify you for some projects, and that may get down to like $2,000 or $3,000. But you know, it's still a pretty good chunk of money up front. And there's, you know, there's payment plans and things like that. But you know, when you're looking at your cash flow as a small business, anticipating paying that because you have to if you want to stay, you know, keep the coverage in place, that's a pretty good cost.
Yeah, I have $1 million in coverage protecting my, it's a small residential practice. I pay about $4,500 per year with a $5,000 deductible.
Yeah, that $5,000 deductible probably lowered your
brought
premiums.
It down, yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I've heard, we've talked about it or written about it in on the LinkedIn group, and it really varies tremendously about where you are and what you do. And so, you know, I've heard numbers down below $2,000, and I've heard numbers above $10,000. And it really depends on who who's practicing, what you're practicing, where you're practicing.
And there is, a difference in companies. Part of it is based on what kind of services they provide, what kind of policy coverage, how broad their policy coverage is. And part of it is just how they, what kind of their appetite for that kind of business is. Some companies will offer kind of the lower end coverage for small firms, assuming they're going to grow. And they hope to lock that firm in so as it grows, it's going to be paying more and more insurance coverage. Others will see it as just the administrative cost of doing a small firm can be pretty high, and therefore they're not going to go down and have really low premiums because they know they've got to cover their internal costs. So yeah, it can vary a great deal from company to company, let alone from the type of firm you have and what kind of projects you do and where you are.
Yeah. And another thing that I've heard small firms say is that they're incorporated or they have a limited liability company and that they don't need professional liability insurance. What about that?
Yeah, that's probably the scariest misconception out there. If you're a licensed design professional, you have personal risk. It's very hard to limit that risk or to do away with that risk because that's what the whole trade-off with being a professional is. You put your personal assets on the line. So if you're a limited liability company, in some states you actually have to have insurance coverage to be a limited liability company. But usually that makes no difference whatsoever on your professional liability risk. Whether you're incorporated or not, doesn't make a difference. It may not make a difference in your business risk either, because as you know, if you're buying a piece of high-tech equipment, even if you're incorporated, that vendor will ask you to sign that personally. So you're personally at risk as well as your company, because they know your company can go bankrupt. But from a professional liability standpoint, if it's something you have to sign and seal, it's personal liability, no matter what. And even if you just hold yourself out as an architect and it's something that doesn't need to be signed and sealed, it's going to be looked at as a professional exposure, and there's not a limit on that. And just to give you an example, in Florida right now, large engineering companies that have said over the years, look, we're a business corporation. We have a contract with the client that limits our liability to, $100,000 or a fee. We're pretty well protected. Well, the highest court in Florida said, wait a minute. Yes, as a business, you're protected, but that person who signed and sealed that document is not protected. So even though you may have corporate assets at risk and you may have a limitation of liability with your client, there's no limitation or liability that applies to that person who signed and sealed the documents. They base that on the registration law. So don't think that there's an easy way to get out by incorporating. Now, there are some contractual things you can do that might help protect you from claims from your client. They may not protect you at all from claims from contractors or other third parties. Obviously, if you were negligent in designing a roof in upstate New York, and because of that misdesign, a snow load came flying down someday and wiped out an old lady walking next to the building, She can sue you for all your work, even if you had agreed with that client that the client can't sue you. So, you know, third parties aren't restricted by what you do in your contract. But you can, in your contract, you know, get the owner to waive claims against you or to limit your liability by contract. And that can be somewhat helpful.
So I think we could probably wrap it up. Is there a place where my listeners might be able to get more information about these topics?
Well, certainly, I think the best place to go for a small architecture firm is to the AIA Trust website, which is theaiatrust.com. And it has... a survey that it did of a number of insurance companies. It will tell you that our program is their preferred provider and all that, but it has information from other insurance companies as well. So that can give contact information and information about the general basis of insurance coverage, professional liability insurance coverage for a number of companies. I mean, there's a lot of companies out there. There are probably now 40-some companies that will offer professional liability insurance to architects. Some of them may not be here next year. I mean, it's easy to collect a premium. You don't want to pay the claim. So a lot of companies come and go pretty quickly. You can also go to our website for more information. You can go to Schinnerer, S-C-H-I-N-N-E-R-E-R.com. Or go through our planetriskmanagement.com website and get some more information about our program. And there's a lot of information for small firms on there, and that's a good place to check. It also has a broker finder thing where you can look for a broker in your area who knows something about AE business and proceed that way if you don't have a broker already.
Yeah, I think that'll be very helpful because that's something that people talk about too. Is how do you find the broker in the first place? So that's a good place to. And I'll have all those links on the website. So if you're listening and you don't have a pencil and paper, it'll be on the website. If some of our listeners wanted to reach out to you and either ask you a question or just say thank you, is there a way that we can reach you?
Easiest way is to do it by email. You can do that in two different ways. Actually neither one is easy. One is my name, which is frank.d@schinnerer, S-C-H-I-N-N-E-R-E-R.com, which would get directly to me. Or you can just send it into our information page, which is VOS, which stands Victor O'Shinner, .rmeducation, that's all jammed together, @schinnerer.com.
And I'll add those two to the website. I won't put them as specific links, but they'll be there in case somebody wants to send you some information. Okay. I don't want the spam bots to get you, so I won't.
That's... That's it. No, I'll be glad to talk with anyone. But the easiest thing is to connect me by email, and I can give you a call.
Yeah, that's great. This has been really informative. I think you've answered a lot of questions that we have as small firms, and I appreciate your time.
Well, one thing you might want to do is you may be collecting more questions from this podcast than we've answered.
Yeah.
And if you want to do a follow-up sometime in the future, we can do that.
That'd be great. Thanks a lot for your time. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Have a great day.
You too.
You'll find more information about professional liability insurance and a few other goodies from Frank at entrearchitect.com/episode5. While you're over at the site, be sure to sign up for my free newsletter, The Entrepreneur Architect Report. Each week, I'll send you over a quick note about what I've been doing over at my firm, Five Cat Studio, and here at Entrepreneur Architect. I include quick links to the most recent blog post, to each podcast, and I always include some additional, inspiring, or useful information that you won't find anywhere else. You may sign up for the newsletter at entrearchitect.com/newsletter, or just head over to the site There's a form on every page. I'd like to thank Frank Musica for spending some time with me today at the podcast, and Ann Casso at AIA Trust. She's the executive director over there. She introduced us. I really appreciate it. Until next time, my name is Mark R. LePage, and I am an entrepreneur architect. Thanks for listening.
From historic homes to modern architecture, brick is one of the most popular building materials around the world.
How to allow the house to bridge the gap between the history of the site, the approachability of this kind of architecture in this kind of neighborhood, and the sort of nostalgia of materiality for the client's past, right? And brick really started to provide an answer for that.
Hi, I'm Doug Pat, and this is Design Vault. There aren't many materials that easily blend with any style and context, but brick does just that. I've seen some extraordinary work with brick, so when Glengarry approached me about hosting this podcast, I couldn't say no.
Typically, Tudor-style houses from outside are just stunningly gorgeous piece of structure, and when you go in, it's just sad.
Yeah.
Dark. And that is not going to happen with my approach to design.
I speak with industry leaders and share inspiring stories behind their work and ingenious design.
You'll see brick that's fashioned into basket weave patterns, sawtooth patterns, what's known in England as diapering.
Doesn't sound like you knew them per se, right? They found you through relationships that you had with other.
Well, wait, Doug, there's more.
Okay.
We'll go behind the scenes to understand process and even the inspiration that sparked the design.
You know, I think we were inspired by all the factory buildings in Dumbo. I mean, that is the kind of period of significance, that early American factory building.
Design Vault by Glengarry. Visit glengarry.com/design-vault or search for Design Vault wherever you get your podcasts and subscribe now to stretch your imagination.
Attention architects and creative minds, get ready to supercharge your brand with Build Your Brand, the podcast that's unlocking the secrets of branding success for creatives. Hey there, it's Mark R. LePage, founder of Entree Architect, and I'm inviting you to join my friend, architect marketing expert, Jeff Eccles at Build Your Brand podcast, where he explores the captivating stories of the world's top brands and transforms their lessons into powerful moves for small firm architects and creatives like you. In season one, Jeff shares the thrilling tale of Southwest Airlines, where he dissects their journey to the summit and distills it into strategies tailor-made for you.
It's important to keep in mind that companies like Southwest compete in the real world, just like you, and face real-world challenges, just like you. You might be surprised at how similar those challenges are to the struggles that you grapple with on a day-to-day basis.
Don't miss out on your blueprint for success. Subscribe, tune in, and let's build your brand together.
You may have noticed that the very best brands in the world are also known for having somewhat unique corporate cultures. That's often the glue that holds everything together when they encounter those rough spots.
We don't do it because it inconveniences the passengers to whom we are primarily dedicated, the short-haul frequent flyer.
Follow the link in the show notes to subscribe to Build Your Brand today. Remember, no matter the size, the journey's the same. Your brand's journey to the top starts here.